So the first reading of today is from the Hebrew Bible, the book of Isaiah, chapter 54, verse 10. You will find it on page 635 in your pew Bibles if you'd like to read along. For the mountains may depart and the hills be removed, but my steadfast love shall not depart from you, and my covenant of peace shall not be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you.
Our second reading this morning is from Paul's letter to the Romans, the church in Rome. And if you would like to read along, you can find it on page 983 in your pew Bible. It's chapter 8, verses 38 through 39. For I am sure that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A beautiful day in the neighborhood. Could you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood. A neighborly day for beauty. Could you be mine? Could you be mine? I've always wanted to have a neighbor just
That is not as easy to do as Fred Rogers makes it look, I have to say. But he did have a lot of practice. Today, as we mentioned, is Memorial Sunday. It's also known in the wider church as All Saints Day, when we remember not just our loved ones who have passed, but the saints of the faith who have gone before us and who have modeled for us Jesus's love. And Fred Rogers was certainly one of those folks. So today the sermon is The Gospel According to Mr. Rogers. Fred Rogers is an iconic figure to many of us. If you were a child, or if you raised a child, any time from 1968 to 2001, you likely watched many episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He's been the subject of multiple books and documentaries, including the hugely popular Won't You Be My Neighbor? Raise your hand if you've seen the Mr. Rogers documentary. Yeah, many people. And you know that there's a new one coming out, a fictionalized account starring Tom Hanks. Well, if you've read or watched any of those, you'll know that Mr. Rogers wasn't only a children's television presenter, he was also an ordained Presbyterian minister. Despite never once mentioning God in his programming, Fred's belief in God's unending and compassionate love for each of God's children saturated every episode. This vibrant sense of God's love for each person led to Mr. Rogers' stance on issues of justice, which he was not afraid to broach through his television programming. In his very first week on air, he talked about the Vietnam War through a skit in the land of make-believe where King Friday the 13th built a wall and what happened when he felt afraid of those who were different from him. Mr. Rogers also employed and championed one of the first black men to be a regular on children's television shows, Officer Clemens, who was also gay. And Mr. Rogers knew that and supported him in that, and fought for him to continue to be a part of the television program, including when desegregation was becoming a very hot-button topic, and Mr. Rogers invited Officer Clemens to bathe together with him with their feet in a kiddie pool as they cooled off on a hot day. So he was not afraid to go for the big subjects and the difficult subjects. But I think what makes me love Fred Rogers the most is what those big and difficult stances grew out of. And that was, as we have mentioned, his belief that each person is worthy of love and acceptance, and that knowing you are loved deeply for exactly who you are allows you to love others deeply exactly as they are. That's certainly the work of the gospel. In Fred's words, you know, I think everybody longs to be loved and longs to know that he or she is lovable. And consequently, the greatest thing we can do is to help somebody know they're loved and capable of loving. And the underlying message of the neighborhood is that if somebody cares about you, it's possible that you'll care for others. You are special, and so is your neighbor. That part is essential, that you're not the only special person in the world. The person you happen to be with at this moment is loved too. Mr. Rogers had a great philosophy on just how to do that, to live into the belovedness of those around us. He said, I believe that appreciation is a holy thing, that when we look for what's best in the person that we happen to be with at the moment, we're doing what God does. So in appreciating our neighbor, we are participating in something truly sacred. The more experiences I've had, he says, the more chances I've had to see the uniqueness of each person, as well as each tree and plant and shell and cloud. The more I find myself delighting every day in the lavish gifts of God, whom I've come to believe is the greatest appreciator of all. I love that idea, God as the great appreciator, the one who not only sees us in our entirety, but loves us in our entirety as well. Like a parent filled with tender affection for a child she knows is imperfect, but that she can't help loving anyway. Isn't that what we all long for? To be truly, deeply known, to be seen for who we are? Or maybe rather we long to be loved not despite someone knowing us fully, but because they know us fully, our dark places as well as our highlights. When I think about heaven, Fred Rogers wrote, it is a state in which we are so greatly loved that there is no fear, no doubt, no disillusionment or anxiety. It is where people look at you with the eyes of Jesus. It's transformative to be loved that way. And Fred Rogers knew that, and I don't think he necessarily cared whether the children watching his television show knew or named that it was God who loved them. I think he simply wanted them to experience God's love. A little bit different than preaching, isn't it? To love someone so fully that they feel God's appreciation for them without maybe even necessarily having to put a name on it. He hoped that this experience of love would translate over the airwaves, and he was right. There are countless stories of what Mr. Rogers' TV program has meant in the lives of those who grew up with him and those who encountered him as adults, too. I want to share two of them this morning very briefly. They're both from Amy Hollingsworth's book, The Simple Faith of Mr. Rogers. Someone can let the children know that they can come in if they would like, because this is about Mr. Rogers, after all. They're waiting to come in for communion, but they're welcome to join us now. The first is about a child told by Mr. Rogers, I have a young friend who was terribly mistreated as a child. His parents wouldn't give him a winter blanket and wouldn't give him a bed to sleep in, but he found Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on TV and he watched the program growing up. His parents were finally reported for their behavior and he was given to placed for adoption. Well, how did Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood help him? the author asked. And Mr. Rogers replied, he said that it gave him hope. He never knew that there were such kind people until he tuned into Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And you know, we do treat each other with respect on the show, naturally. Everyone should be treated with respect, but somehow people understand if it can happen in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, maybe it can happen someplace else, too. I think we all have our own neighborhood in that way. Maybe children we teach, or next-door neighbors, or people we work with, that if they can see us love someone else in our vicinity, then maybe they'll come to know that they can be loved that way, too. The second story is about an adult named Kathy, and Kathy's story began when she was in her late 40s and finding it difficult to wrap up the work on her master's degree. She had completed the research for her thesis, but the prospect of committing it to paper and exposing it to the scrutiny of advisors and colleagues proved daunting. She really felt terrified about it and recognized that it had something to do with fear of the lovability of a smart woman. She'd been told as a girl that girls weren't smart, and she figured that if she put this out there, that people would tear it down. But then one day, she turned on the television looking for distraction from writing her thesis, and she found Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. He was making a greeting card out of construction paper, carefully cutting pictures out of a magazine and placing them just so, and planning what message he would write. And he said, he looked into the camera and he said, "It's fun when you have a project, isn't it? You have an idea for something you want to do and you think about how you want to do it. It takes a lot of planning. I know it's hard work, and I'm so proud of you for trying." "Mr. Rogers' gentle words were a beam of light into the darkened room in my spirit," said Kathy, "where I'd been hiding in fear. I cried like a child that morning, snuggled in the lazy boy by the TV, feeling old hurts melting away." Kathy started watching every day, and she said it was uncanny how the simple messages of acceptance and encouragement helped me to write and to be productive. "I feel like he did such a wonderful job of aligning himself with love and compassion, in a word, with God." Making a greeting card out of construction paper and a simple encouragement was somehow translated into the assurance of a loving and compassionate God for a 40-year-old woman, not just a 4-year-old child. I had a conversation the other day about how so many of us, sometimes on a level so deep we've hidden it even from ourselves, don't really believe that we're worthy of love. Or we believe that the good parts of us, the kind and caring, generous parts of us, are worthy of love, but not so much the difficult, selfish, darker parts. The idea that we aren't entirely lovable is responsible for a lot of harm done in this world, from the negative talk that we repeat to ourselves, to a hurtful word hurled at a spouse, all the way to war and conflicts. And the idea that somebody could love us and embrace us just as we are, let alone that God could love us and embrace us just as we are, with all our faults and our rotten places, it's radical. Maybe even unbelievable. Maybe that's why we have at the center of our faith the unbelievable story of Jesus' death and resurrection. In the words of Mr. Rogers, "I believe that at the center of the universe there dwells a loving spirit who longs for all that's best in creation, a spirit who knows the great potential of each planet as well as each person, and little by little will love us into being more than we ever dreamed possible. It's a mistake to think that we have to be lovely to be loved by humans or God, because that loving spirit would rather die than give up on any of us." Once upon a time, a man named Fred Rogers decided that he wanted to live in heaven. Heaven is the place where good people go when they die, but this man, Fred, he didn't want to go to heaven. He wanted to live in heaven. And so one day, he decided that he would share the joy and the freedom and the beauty of unfettered love with everyone who happened to turn on the television screen. That kind of love, friends, is transformative. It's healing. It repairs something inside of us. And if we can imagine it or even just glimpse that kind of love, then we begin to live that love and to share it with others. To live not in judgment of ourselves or others, but in awe and in appreciation. And someone else feels seen and loved and appreciated and freed. And it goes on and on and on. I could go on and on and on about Mr. Rogers. And if you haven't seen one of the documentaries or read a book, I invite you to dig into it because there's so much good theology in there, not to mention stories that will just make you cry. Christine knows that I was crying in my office all week this week trying to write this sermon, reading wonderful, touching stories about how that love of God soothes those tender places in our hearts. But because it is Memorial Sunday and Communion Sunday, and we've had many good things happening in the service, and we need to get to a few more of them, I'm going to close now, and it's going to be with Mr. Rogers' invitation given at so many convocations and award ceremonies to his audience. All of us, he says, have special ones who have loved us into being. Many of us are here today to remember those special ones. And so would you just take, along with me, 10 seconds to think of the people who have helped you become who you are. Those who have cared about you and wanted what was best in your life. Just 10 seconds of silence. I'll watch the time. Whomever you've been thinking about, says Mr. Rogers, how pleased they must be to know the difference you feel that they've made. Many of the words and the prayers in our service today are from Fred, and I'll have a few more of them to share with you as we conclude the service, but for now, amen. As you go out into this world and into this week, I'd invite you to hear these words of the Reverend Fred Rogers. You don't ever have to do anything sensational for people to love you. When I say it's you I like, I'm talking about that part of you that knows that life is far more than anything you can ever see or touch or hear. That deep part of you that allows you to stand for those things without which humankind cannot survive. Love that conquers hate, peace that rises triumphant over war, and justice that proves more powerful than greed. So in all you do, in all your life, I wish you the strength and the grace to make those choices which allow you and your neighbor to become the best of whomever you are. Go in God's grace.